If you can't accurately make out words and letters, if it's hard to read and spell, then tasks which seem simple to everyone else are just going to be so much harder for you. And if you're someone who's dealing with detailed research, complicated concepts, statistics, then just imagine how dyslexia is going to impact your work. So let me introduce someone who's making her way with just that background, Gráinne Cleary. She's a researcher in ecology at Deakin University. Gráinne, hello.
Hello, thank you for having me on.
Yes, we've met you on RN before, actually. You've told us about your investigation of why and how people give food and water to wild birds. But Gráinne, let's go right back. When did you first experience learning difficulties?
So dyslexia right off. The big thing was a speech impediment. So I never knew that speech impediment is part of dyslexia. So I grew up in the 80s in Ireland, and it wasn't, people just thought you were stupid. It was a case of, you know, you just can't write, your writing's really messy, you're stupid.
What age are we talking about?
We're talking about probably, yeah, in primary school, so under the age of 12.
Yeah.
And, you know, you just kept going, but you would still get the answers wrong. And it was constantly trying and not really understanding that I was dyslexic. And because dyslexia is often in a family, so you get it from one of your parents, and it actually gets worse as it goes down the family line. Mm. So my dad was dyslexic, but very ashamed of it and always hiding it. So when they discovered that I might be dyslexic, it was a case of hide it, don't tell anyone. You know, it was a dirty little secret, you know, something to be ashamed of.
And people tell you that, you know, you were stupid?
Yeah.
I mean,
oh, yeah.
And so that comes from the shame.
Yeah, and that comes from the shame. And this is part of the problem, is that because academia, you know, education, especially under the age of 10, is so important, it can help develop your sense of self. So if you're being told you're stupid by a teacher or by a classmate, that can really affect who you are, and it can drive anxiety for young people because they try so hard and they want to fit in with their peers, but they're not. And littlest things that teachers can say, even little things, you can really affect your confidence.
Yeah.
And you have a result of kids growing up with anxiety over school who have dyslexia.
So you said there was a speech impediment. And that is something that you didn't realise at that time that can go hand in hand with dyslexia. What kinds of other things? Because I think of the words and the letters jumping around. Was it anything like that for you?
Yeah, absolutely. So for me, reading, especially reading for pleasure. So my mum and dad were very big readers. My sister was a big reader. So I'd constantly be trying to read fiction books and I just couldn't. It would be so laborious just reading it and defining the words in the sentence that you actually lost the flow of what you were reading. So it was always been very frightened of books, been very frightened of learning, always a struggle, especially spellings. Back in the day, you know, you had to learn your spellings and you go into school the next day and you're given a spelling test. And it was always a case of, you know, you would stand up, who got 10 out of 10, you know, who got 9 out of 10 sit down, and I would be one of the last standing and they would always be like, Gráinne, just sit down. You failed every
day. That's a way to publicly shame you in front of the class.
Totally, always. And when I had to drop Irish, because we learn Irish, which is our native language, though it's not really spoken anymore, we still learn it going through school. And it's something to be very proud of, to be able to speak Irish. And this is something I had to drop. And I was so ashamed of dropping it. And I used to pretend I was half English. And I'd be like, oh, I've got an exemption from Irish because I'm half English. Anything to lie just to let them know that I wasn't dyslexic because of the stigma surrounding it. And that's just rubbish. That shouldn't be. Yeah. It's not my fault I was born with this, and I just really, really wanted an education.
Yeah.
So I had to fight for the education to stay in school because I kept failing. Not only would I fail, I would get an NG. And an NG means no grade. And I would come home and show me dad, and my dad would be like, ah, natural genius, that means. Don't mind, I'm growing. You know, and he would, you know, and he would make fun, or I would get like a really, really low fail, so I almost passed, and I'd be like, "Look, Dad, I got a low fail, I almost passed."
Yeah.
You know, that was just my life, fail. But you know the information in your head, you just can't write it down the whole time.
Was there any support at all for you and your learning needs?
No, not for me, not in primary school. They didn't really know how to handle it, and once I went to high school, again, the teachers didn't know how to handle it. And it was a case of, well, why are you special? Why aren't you doing Irish? Why are you? And it was always in the lower subjects. So pass English, pass maths, very low level. And I only did 5 subjects for my leaving certificate. So that meant I was never going to get educated in Ireland. Like, I was never getting into university. I dropped Irish. So if I wanted to be educated, if I wanted to be an ecologist, if I wanted to follow my dream, I would have to go to the UK. So I knew I would never get straight into university. So what I did was a higher national diploma in wildlife management, and that was very practical.
So you did a vocational training
exactly.
in wildlife management.
Exactly, yeah. In England, and that was a 2-year course. And through persistence of phoning the universities, I got into second year an ecology course. And I think they just let me in because I was pestering them so much. And because this is what I wanted to do, so wanted to do it. And I kept thinking, once I get to university, the dyslexia will be gone. I've gotten high enough. It will be gone. Surely it'll be gone. No, it stays right. with you. You can't hide from it.
So what, you actually thought that? You thought that it was what, just a growing up thing and that the dyslexia wouldn't bother you anymore after a while?
What I was told growing up is Grania tries her best. Grania always tries her best, but still fails, tries her best. And she's, you know, lazy. I was always told I was lazy. So you just work harder than anyone else. Huh. You know, you're constantly working. And for me, anxiety would come if I stopped working, if I took an afternoon off, if I wasn't working. In case, no, you have to keep working or you'll fail. You have to keep working. And you kind of come addicted to this, nearly the pain of failure. So you keep pushing yourself harder and harder. And sometimes it is like banging your head against the wall. Huh. Because no matter how often you read it, your classmates only have to read it once or twice and they know it. But for me, no, it had to be 3 or 4 times. Yeah. And I couldn't understand, if I was studying and I was writing the notes like all my friends, why wasn't I doing as well as them? And that was always the dyslexia. And it took me, it wasn't until I got into second year of uni that it was actually properly diagnosed.
Well, what did they say at that time? So, I mean, you'd been going through all of this for years and years already. Yeah, and then finally you did get professionally assessed. And what did they say to you at that time?
So I was told, I got picked up. One thing that got me, and it's common in dyslexia, is when you're listening to a lecture and you're trying to write notes, I can't do both at the same time. I can either listen to you or I can write notes. So that's where one of the lecturers said, hang on, why can't you keep up? You're in third year, so while
And this is a crucial thing in your university training. Yes.
Yeah, and I was like, oh, I think I might be just a little bit dyslexic, but you learn how to cope. I had good friends who gave me that lecture note. I, you know, this is how I coped. I had my friends, my peers helped me. So he sent me off to be assessed, and I went in all bouncy, happy, going, I'm just going to say I'm a little bit dyslexic. It's not going to be a big deal. And I went in and she started giving me all these quizzes to do and, you know, saying things backwards, like 1, 2, 3, ABC, say that backwards. And I couldn't. I remember just my confidence kept going. And she was giving me these shapes to make, and I couldn't make the shapes.
That's interesting. So this is not even words, letters and numbers.
No, it went to your spatial memory and how you put things together.
Yeah.
And it was the writing and general knowledge, trying to understand my general knowledge. And she goes to me, so you're in third year university? And I go, yeah. And she goes, you shouldn't be here. You shouldn't have gotten that far. And she said, you know, out of a scale of 1 to 10, you know, because dyslexia is like a rainbow. There's different scales of it. There's different abilities in it. You know, she said, you're a strong 6, and 10 being you can't even write your own name.
Wow.
You know, what are you doing this? And that really shook my confidence. So I kind of went back and was like.
So, I mean, what's upsetting about that is that that should have been the moment where you finally felt the relief of a burden that you'd been professionally assessed. But actually, you didn't walk out of there thinking that you now had a renewed sense of, I can do this because I've overcome this damn, you know, 6.5 or whatever it was out of 10.
Yeah.
No, you actually left with less confidence.
Yeah, I left and thinking, oh God, why am I trying? I'm obviously not going to be any good. You know, I was just passing exams. What got me through university was the written assignments. So because I loved research so much, I could do that. And then my peers could read over my work to help with the grammar. But sitting exams and everything like that, it was just a nightmare for me. So you do rely on a lot of your friends to help you, and that can then kind of erode your confidence because you're giving your power away. You need them to help you. And, you know, I had a lot of problems with bullying throughout growing up. And yeah, and that was really, really hard, you know, just dealing with the bullying and people taking advantage of you just because you can't spell. You know, and you're like, it's not my fault I can't spell. I'm really trying. You know, my best friend's a dictionary. People say, spell check, do spell check. No, that doesn't often work. Sometimes you just see the word and you're like, I don't know why not that spelled right. When I was doing my PhD, one of my first reports I put in said, badgers need a vacation from TB. And I kept looking at the word vacation and I was trying to write the word vaccine. But I looked at it so often.
They needed a vaccination, not a vacation.
Exactly. But I couldn't see the difference in the words.
Yeah.
So it can be things like that where you look at the word so often, it just doesn't even make sense to you anymore.
Well, on Life Matters, you're hearing from Grania Cleary, a researcher at Deakin University's School of Life and Environmental Sciences, and someone who's made a career in science while dealing with dyslexia, because you did eventually graduate. You got your PhD.
I did. My PhD was all about farming. I was dealing with the farmers. I was dealing with people. And with normal people, you know, not leading academics. Normal people, I could really communicate to them. And that's what I loved about my research. Writing up was hard, doing the papers were hard, but talking to the people about my research, talking to the farmers and letting them know how my research applies to them, that's what I loved. And okay. I loved getting the data and researching it. I just am great with the stats, but I loved it. Like, if I was going to go into academia, if I was going to do this with dyslexia, I was going to do something I bloody well loved.
So you said, you can talk with people, it's easier, you can interview, you can get stories, you can recount anecdotes, you can collect information that way, that gets you past things like statistics, which must be a nightmare, I can see that. But in your experience now, what else do you think can help when you're managing your own dyslexia? What can help you?
What can help me is slowing the hell down. Mm. I am so, you know, with dyslexia, you kind of get the perfectionism as well. And it's only recently I'm like, no, nothing's perfect. There's cracks in everything. It's how the light gets in, as Lone Cowan says. So it is a case of just trying harder and working with peers and working with other academics. But of course, other academics don't like having to correct basic grammar. Mm. So I can still get smart arse remarks and I can still get comments. And it's like, oh, lad, I'm 40. I'm fighting this since I was 15. Will you give me a bleed and break? Yeah. You know, I get the money, I get the research, I get the people. I do. I'm just not great at structuring the papers. But academics, because it's so easy to them, can often just be like very dismissive. And that's where your confidence starts getting eroded and you start getting anxiety again. Yeah. And you start worrying constantly. And this is because I stayed in academia. If I'd left, at the age of 12 when they wanted me to leave school and went into a trade, you know, I wouldn't be dealing with my dyslexia every day. But because I love academic, I love the knowledge, I love sharing knowledge with people, you know, I kept going into academia. And of course, I kept getting bullied. I kept getting the insults. So, but now I'm 40 and I'm like, I'm over it all. This is who I am. Yeah. Accept it or get away from me. But I'm not apologising. I'm not taking bullying anymore. Like, I'm over being ashamed of it. I'm over hiding it. People don't understand what dyslexia really is. And even though you tell your academic, look, I'm dyslexic, so working on this paper with me is going to be difficult, you know, you still get the comments back with smart-ass comments and fix this grammar. And it's like, oh, this is my dyslexia shining. Yeah. You said you'd be okay with it and now suddenly you're not.
So give a dyslexic person a chance in your life, Gráinne. Is that the message I can take from this?
That is, give them. Don't judge. They're really special people. We have determination. We have grit. And if we want something, we will stick with it. And something else about being dyslexic is you meet so many people, as I have, who will say, you will amount to nothing. You're going to fail. You're going to be nothing. And I would look at them and go, really? You just watch me. And you use that as your determination to go on and do what you want to do. Don't let people tell you you can't. Don't. As I said, if you want to go to university and you don't get the marks, do a bridging course. You know, like I did, the wildlife management course. Just follow your dreams. And good friends are so important, especially smart ones. I always hung out with the top of my class, always.
Gráinne Cleary, researcher at Deakin University, thanks so much for talking with us on Life Matters.
Thank you so much for having me.